All right, so we're diving into Davos 2025. You know that time when that little Swiss town turns into, like, the world's biggest brainstorming session?
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy mix of people. World leaders, CEOs, economists, even a few celebrities thrown in for good measure.
All trying to solve the world's problems. Yeah. At least that's the idea.
Sort of a high-stakes global networking event.
Exactly. And you know me, I love a good deep dive. So you sent over a couple articles.
Right. World Economic Forum 2025, Challenges, Change, and Collaboration. And Wirtschaft Wandel Weichenstellen, Das Weltwirtschaftsforum in Davos 2025.
Wow, that second one's a mouthful.
It is. It's German.
Makes sense. Plus, we've got that YouTube video, The Global Economic Outlook 2025.
Yep, lots to unpack.
Okay, so before we get into the nitty-gritty, paint me a picture. What was the overall vibe in Davos this year?
Well, the theme was collaboration for the intelligent age.
Catchy.
And there was this sense that, yeah, we're facing some huge challenges, but if everyone works together, governments, businesses, you name it, we might actually be able to solve them.
So, like, cautious optimism.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Cautious optimism, but with a healthy dose of reality.
Makes sense. And speaking of reality, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Geopolitics. The world's a pretty messy place right now. One of the articles mentioned over 50 heads of state were there.
Yeah, including Zelensky of Ukraine. He was appealing for, you know, continued support.
Wow, that must have been intense.
It definitely added another layer to everything. You can't just focus on economic growth when there are wars and conflicts happening.
Right. And then there's the whole Donald Trump factor. I mean, back in the White House, and he addressed Davos virtually, right?
He did, virtually.
Yeah.
And it definitely threw a wrench into things.
I bet.
Especially when it comes to global trade. He brought back that America First agenda, big focus on U.S. economic growth.
Oh, boy, here we go again.
And, yeah, there were hints about tariffs and protectionist policies.
So how did people react to that? Was it like, oh, no, not this again? Or was there some hope that maybe this time things would be different?
It was a mixed bag, honestly. Some people saw it as a potential boost for certain sectors of the U.S. economy.
Okay, I can see that.
But others were worried about trade wars and what that would mean for global stability. The word tariffs tends to make economists nervous.
For good reason. Well, speaking of things that make economists nervous, let's talk climate change. That YouTube video, The Global Economic Outlook 2025, I'm guessing climate change came up.
Oh, absolutely. It was a major focus. The articles had some pretty alarming statistics, too. 2024 was the hottest year on record.
Dicks.
And Al Gore, he was there, you know, he had this really powerful way of putting things into perspective. He said, we're pumping out greenhouse gases equivalent to 750,000 atomic bombs exploding every single day.
Whoa, that's a scary thought.
Right. And the effects are being felt everywhere. Extreme weather events are becoming more common and more intense.
Yeah, it's hard to ignore it at this point.
The articles mention scientists saying that wildfires are raging across Los Angeles. They're even talking about seeing a clear human fingerprint on these weather patterns.
So, with all of this, was there a sense of we're all doomed? Or was there some talk about solutions?
There was definitely a sense of urgency, but it wasn't all doom and gloom. A lot of the focus was on finding solutions, and specifically on this idea of an energy transition.
Moving away from fossil fuels.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, there was a lot of concern about energy security. You know, countries need reliable and affordable energy to function.
That's a good point. It's a tough balancing act.
It is. And I mean, it's kind of like trying to rebuild an airplane while it's still in flight.
That's a pretty terrifying analogy. Okay, so energy transition is a big theme, but what about the economy in general? Any consensus on whether we're heading for a boom or a bust?
Well, that's where things get a little more complicated. The YouTube video made it feel like watching a high-stakes poker game. Some experts were optimistic because of how well the U.S. economy was performing.
Okay, makes sense.
But then others were worried about rising global debt and inflation and the whole trade war thing.
So basically, nobody really knows what's going to happen.
Pretty much. The IMF projected global growth at 3.3%, which is decent, but it's below the historical average.
So we're kind of on a knife's edge.
Yeah, it feels that way. The U.S. is doing well, but Europe's facing challenges. And then you've got the emerging markets, which are dealing with their own set of complexities.
So a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, amidst all this talk about economics and geopolitics, one article mentioned something about a focus on jobs, health, and inclusion. Was that just like a side note, or was there some real substance to those discussions?
No, they actually went beyond just buzzwords. There was a real emphasis on creating an economy that works for everyone, not just the privileged few.
Okay, I like the sound of that.
And get this, one of the articles had this crazy statistic. If women participated equally in the economy, global GDP would be 20% higher.
Wow, that's huge.
Right. And the focus wasn't just on women, it was also on the future of work in general, especially with AI and automation changing the job market so rapidly.
Yeah, that's a whole other can of worms.
It is. There were lots of discussions about how we need to reskill and upskill workers to meet the demands of this new technological landscape. It's like we all need to become lifelong learners.
Always be learning. Always be adapting.
Exactly. And it's not just about learning specific technical skills. It's about developing those uniquely human skills that will be even more valuable as technology advances. Things like critical thinking, problem solving, creativity, and adaptability.
So it's not about humans versus machines. It's about figuring out how to work alongside them.
Exactly. And that's what's so exciting about this. As technology changes, it creates new opportunities for jobs and industries that we can't even imagine yet.
True. Who knows what the future holds? Okay, so we've covered a lot here. Geopolitical uncertainty, the climate crisis, the global economy hanging in the balance, and AI changing everything. It sounds like Davos was a bit of a roller coaster ride.
It was, but amidst all the uncertainty, there was this sense of hope, this idea that we can actually tackle these issues if we work together.
So collaboration is key.
Absolutely.
Well, this has been a great overview, but it feels like we've only scratched the surface.
We've got a lot more to dive into.
Okay, so we're back, diving deeper into Davos 2025. We've talked about these huge global challenges. But it wasn't all doom and gloom, right? There was this sense of hope that maybe, just maybe, we can actually solve these problems if we put our heads together.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't just empty talk about collaboration. The forum itself was designed around this idea.
Oh, how so?
Well, the diversity of the attendees was pretty amazing. It wasn't just the usual G7 countries and big corporations. There were representatives from emerging markets, regional blocs like ASEAN. Even smaller countries got a voice.
A real mix of perspectives.
Right, and that was intentional. It's this recognition that solutions need to come from everywhere, not just the top.
Okay, I'm following. But did that actually translate into any real action plans, or was it mostly just talk?
Well, there was a lot of discussion, of course. But what was interesting was this focus on something they called multi-stakeholder partnerships.
Multi-stakeholder partnerships. Sounds kind of, I don't know, corporate-y.
It does, but it's actually a pretty big deal. It's about moving away from the idea that solutions only come from governments.
Okay, I see. So what, everyone gets involved?
Exactly. Businesses, civil society organizations, universities, even individuals. It's about recognizing that we need everyone's expertise and creativity to solve these complex problems.
So it's not just about talking the talk, but actually walking the walk. Give me some concrete examples. What kind of practical solutions came out of these partnerships?
Well, on the climate front, there was a lot of talk about businesses taking the lead. Companies pledging to reduce emissions, invest in renewable energy, and develop technologies to capture and store carbon.
So it's not just about governments setting rules, but companies actually stepping up and doing their part.
Yeah, and it's not just out of the goodness of their hearts. Consumers are demanding sustainable products. Investors are looking for companies that are taking climate action seriously.
So it's actually good business sense.
Exactly. Sustainability is becoming a key competitive advantage.
Makes sense. So lots of progress on the climate front, but what about the economy? Those discussions were a little more cautious, right?
They were. Remember all that talk about debt, inflation, and the whole trade war thing?
Yeah, it felt like the global economy was on shaky ground.
It definitely felt that way. But amidst all that, there was this really important theme that kept coming up. Inclusive growth.
Inclusive growth, meaning?
It means that economic growth is not enough. It has to benefit everyone, not just the wealthy few.
Right. It's about making sure everyone gets a piece of the pie.
Exactly. And that means addressing inequality, investing in education and healthcare, creating opportunities for everyone to participate in the economy.
Okay. Sounds good in theory, but how do we actually make that happen? Mm-hmm. Especially with AI and automation, you know, changing the job market so quickly, it feels like we're not quite ready for all this technological change.
It is a lot to take in, and the sources definitely highlighted this need for reskilling and upskilling workers. We can't just cling to the jobs of the past.
So we all need to be learning new things, constantly adapting.
Pretty much. And it's not just about technical skills like coding or robotics. It's about developing those uniquely human qualities that will become even more valuable as technology advances. Things like critical thinking, creativity, and the ability to adapt to new situations.
So it's not about humans versus machines, but figuring out how to work together.
Exactly. And that's where things get really interesting because new technologies create new opportunities. We can't even imagine what jobs and industries will exist in the future. Think about it. A few decades ago, nobody could have predicted the rise of social media managers or app
Oh,
developers.
it's true. So it's not all doom and gloom.
Definitely not. But we have to be proactive and adapt. Okay, so we've talked about collaboration, sustainability, inclusive growth, the changing nature of work. But let's not forget about AI. It seems like it's a big part of all of this.
Yeah, AI is everywhere, right? It's not just some separate issue.
Exactly. It's interwoven with all these global trends, and it has the potential to accelerate progress in so many areas.
Like how so?
Well, we already talked about its role in climate action, but imagine AI helping doctors diagnose diseases more accurately or even develop personalized treatments.
Wow, that would be incredible. But what about the potential downsides of AI? You know, those sci-fi scenarios where robots take over.
It's important to be aware of those risks, for sure. And that's why the discussions about AI ethics and governance were so important at Davos.
Okay, so it's not just about developing the technology, but making sure it's used for good.
Exactly. And that responsibility doesn't just lie with tech companies. It lies with all of us, governments, businesses, civil society, individuals. We all have a role to play.
So it's about striking a balance. Embracing the potential of AI while also putting safeguards in place.
Right. And remembering that it's a powerful tool that needs to be used responsibly.
Okay, I think I'm getting the big picture here. Davos was about recognizing these complex challenges and, more importantly, finding ways to work together to address them.
Exactly. And that collaboration needs to be more than just a buzzword. It has to translate into concrete action.
Right. Action that's informed by a deep understanding of how everything is connected.
Absolutely. Geopolitical shifts, the climate crisis, the rise of AI, the changing nature of work, it's all interconnected, and we need to approach these challenges with a systemic mindset.
Okay, I'm feeling inspired, but I also have a lot of questions. Like, how do we actually make this collaboration happen? How do we bridge those divides between countries, industries, different parts of society?
Those are great questions, and those are exactly the questions we're going to explore in the final part of our deep dive.
So stay tuned. We're going to delve even deeper into some of the strategies and frameworks for making collaboration work. All right, so final part of our Davos deep dive. We've talked about the big challenges, explored some solutions, but now, how do we actually make this whole collaboration thing work? It sounds great on paper, but putting it into practice on a global scale, that's got to be tricky.
Yeah, it's a huge task for sure. But the thing is, Davos wasn't just about identifying the problems. It was also about figuring out the how, the practical strategies and frameworks for actually making progress.
Okay, so give me the goods. What are some of the strategies?
One big theme was strengthening those, international institutions and agreements. Like, there were discussions about reforming the World Trade Organization,
The WTO, I mean.
giving them more power to deal with issues like climate change, pandemics, things like that.
So making sure those global organizations can actually do their job.
Right, exactly. But it can't just be top-down either. Another important idea was empowering regional and local actors.
Okay.
Like, regional groups, ASEAN, the African Union, they have a big role to play in driving growth and tackling problems in their own regions.
Makes sense. So it's kind of a think globally, act locally approach.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it because the best solutions are often the ones that are tailored to a specific place,
Right. One size fits all doesn't really work in a world this complex. But how do we make sure everyone's pulling in the same direction? You've got global institutions, regional groups, local communities. How do you get them all on the same page?
That's where inclusivity comes in. Collaboration can't just be a conversation between the same old powerful countries and corporations. It has to include everyone, developing countries, civil society, marginalized communities, and, especially young people. They're the ones who will be dealing with the consequences.
So giving everyone a voice at the table, but even then, building trust, that's got to be tough, especially in a world that feels so divided.
You're absolutely right. Trust is essential. Without it, nothing works.
So how do you build trust on a global scale?
Well, some of the ideas that came up at Davos were transparency and accountability. When institutions and individuals are open about what they're doing and why, it builds trust.
Okay, so being upfront about the challenges, admitting mistakes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and also being willing to listen to different perspectives, even if you don't agree with them. You know, sometimes the best solutions come from those tough conversations.
Like getting out of your bubble and hearing what other people have to say.
Right. And remember, collaboration isn't a one-time thing. It's an ongoing process. It takes patience, persistence, and a willingness to learn from each other.
So we've talked about strengthening institutions, empowering local actors, building inclusive partnerships, and fostering trust. That's a lot to take in. But what does this all mean for our listeners? What can they actually do with all this information?
That's a great question. I think the key takeaway is that even though Davos might seem like this exclusive event for the elite, the ideas that come out of it affect all of us.
It's like connecting the global to the local, the big picture to our everyday lives.
Exactly. So as you go about your day, think about the choices you make. What you buy, how you vote, where you spend your time and energy, those choices are connected to the bigger picture.
So we all have a role to play.
Absolutely. Even small actions can make a difference. And I think that's what I hope our listeners take away from this deep dive. A sense of agency, you know? A belief that we can all be change makers, no matter who we are or what we do.
Well said. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. It's been a fascinating journey through the world of Davos 2025. Lots to think about.
It has been a fascinating deep dive.
We encourage you to keep exploring these topics, have those tough conversations, and remember that even in the face of these big challenges, there's always hope. And we can make a difference if we work together.
Thanks for listening.
And until next time, keep diving deep.